Thank you, Brad, for leading those two songs. The first one is especially based on our text today, and the other is as well, as we're going to talk about being our hope as an anchor and making our hope sure in our relationship with the Lord. I want you to turn to chapter 6 of Hebrews this morning, and we're going to read beginning at verse 9. And we'll read to the end of the chapter, verses 9 through 20. And in chapter 5, I guess beginning about verse 11 all the way down through verse 8 of chapter 6, there's a chastisement that the writer gives to the original recipients of this letter because they're not growing as they should. And in the class section, we'll talk about that particular section of Scripture. But he chastises them, and it's an amazing thing that he says to them. But notice how he begins verse 9, right after that. He says, "But, beloved, we are convinced of better things concerning you and things that accompany salvation, though we are speaking in this way. For God is not unjust so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. For when God made the promise to Abraham, since he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, 'I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply you.' And thus, having patiently waited, he obtained the promise. For men swear by one greater than themselves, and with them an oath given as confirmation is an end of every dispute. In the same way, God, desiring even more to show to the heirs of the promise the unchangeableness of his purpose, interposed with an oath, in order that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we may have strong encouragement, we who have fled for refuge and laying hold of the hope set before us. This hope we have as an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast, and one which enters within the veil, where Jesus has entered as a forerunner for us, having become a high priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek." The point of the passage is the writer is encouraging his readers to not let go of their hope. He wants them to secure it. He wants them to be anchored to it, to make it sure. And so in verses 9 through 12, he accomplishes a few things. He compliments them by saying he's convinced, even though he's chastised them rather severely, he's convinced of better things concerning them. In verse 10, he commends them for their past efforts and diligence in their serving the Lord. In verses 11 and 12, he expresses his desire for them to renew that diligence, to not lose their hope, to encourage them to be like some of the ancients who held on to their hope to the end of their lives. In verses 13 through 20, he moves into an illustration of Abraham, who held on to his hope all the way to the end until it was realized. And God showed Abraham how firm his hope should be by giving him both a promise and an oath. And it's by these two unchangeable things it is impossible for God to lie. He promised Abraham, he swore to Abraham that he would give and bless him in the ways that he promised. And then the writer applies all of that to us by saying we need to have that strong encouragement in laying hold of the hope set before us. Abraham had a hope. The ancients had hope. Therefore, we have hope we need to hold on. And then he finally suggests that our hope is like an anchor in verses 19 and 20. It's sure, steadfast, and that brings us to where we want to go today. I want to begin by defining some terms that I find here in my text, the New American Standard words that are here, which all of you are using, the Mosaic version of the Bible. Assurance is one of those words that stands out to me, and it comes from a Greek term that literally means have a full measure of something. That's what this original word means. So it comes to mean and can be translated certainty, and we see, I think, here how this term is understood. If you have a full measure of hope, then you are absolutely certain that it's yours, whatever the hope is. It's not a I wish I may, I wish I might kind of hope. It's an absolute certainty expectation. And that's what this word is bringing out. Then he uses the expression laying hold or taking hold in verse 18. And that's from one original Greek word that literally, when it was first used, it meant to be strong or to possess power. But by the time the word was used in the New Testament, it really meant to reach out and seize something or to take hold of something. And so the Hebrew writer here is saying that God has laid out a hope for us for the future, in the unseen future, and he's wanting us to seize it, to grab hold of it, and to never let go. But just as you can grab hold and seize, take hold of something, you can also let go of it, can't you? And that's what's happening to the original readers here of Hebrews. They're just slowly letting their hope slip through their fingers. They're loosening their grip on their hope. In verse 19, there's another term. He uses the word anchor. And we know what an anchor is, especially as it applies to boats. The anchor of the boat, a boat is anchored so that it doesn't drift. And he's suggesting here that our hope should, we should be anchored to our hope so that we don't drift away from the faith that we have in God. And these Christians need to be reassured of their hope, to be anchored to it. In verse 19, there are a couple of terms, sure and steadfast. The term sure comes from a word that means not tripped up. That's what it literally means. If you're sure-footed, you're not tripped up. And that means certainty, it means security and safety. The word steadfast also means that something remains stable, it doesn't move. And so it's something firm and secure. So in making our hope sure and anchoring our hope, it has to do with securing something tightly so it doesn't slip away from you. And it's this idea of grabbing hold of what God has laid up in store for us in the future and not allowing ourselves to be loosened away from it. If you're securely tied to it, if you're anchored to something, you are secure, aren't you? And you know for certain that it's going to be yours. There's no doubt, in other words. Now, I know a little something about securing things. Several years ago, it's been about 15, I guess, years ago, I bought my wife a greenhouse kit. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those. I'd never seen one. It came from England. And I thought she loved flowers and she had a green thumb and growing, but we lived outside of Durango and the deer would eat anything she planted. And so I said, well, what we need here is a greenhouse, but I couldn't afford to build a real greenhouse. It's all plastic. It came in about 20 boxes. I couldn't believe it. It filled up half my garage. And I'm looking at that stack and I'm saying, what did I get myself into? Well, it was spring break the next week, and both of my daughters were going to come home. They were teachers at the time. I said, we'll wait till the girls get home, and we'll put that thing together. Well, they came home, and my oldest read the instructions, and then the three of us, Mary and my daughter Gabriel, and I and Mikey, after reading the instructions, we'd all pitch in and do what was said in the instructions. And you'd lay out different things, and there was about a million little green pins. You know, they were like that. You squeeze them together, and it would go in, and then they would hold everything together. And there were thousands of those little green pins. So we'd work hard, and Mikey would read the instructions, and we came to a point. And I said, "Well, that doesn't make sense because that." The piece you're talking about is not there. It's laying over there. It's not over here. She looked at it. She said, oh, the wind blew the page. I missed the page. So we're pulling out those little green pins and starting over again. And that happened two or three times. But we finally, after 2 days, got this greenhouse put together. And we stood back and said, man, that's beautiful. Now, we worked on pavement, putting this thing together. I had a 3-car garage and pavement and a long driveway out in front of the three bays, and the pavement went around to the side. We worked on the side of the garage to put that thing together. And I was so proud, I announced that, well, let's get dressed and cleaned up and go to town. I'm buying dinner because of the great work we all did. Well, we did. And we didn't even look at the greenhouse. We came out, got in the car, and I had backed it in, and so we just drove straight out. I'm looking in the rearview mirror. The greenhouse is not where we left it. I can't even see it in the mirror. And I stopped the car at the end of the driveway, and I said, girls, did you move that thing? Dad, why would we move it? Well, it's not there. And we all turned around and looked. And that silly, the wind had gotten up, and that silly thing walked itself around all the way to the other side of the garage. You could follow its trail by the little green pins it left all the way around. I couldn't believe it. And so what do you, got to secure it. I had two vehicles. I put one in front of that thing and the other on the side. I had a rope that was 100 feet long. I wrapped that thing in the rope, tied it to both vehicles. It was not moving. Neighbors called, Orbison, what are you doing? What is that? But I tell you what, I slept good that night. I knew it was secure. If you doubt about your salvation, if you don't have security with your salvation, it's going to affect the way you live your life. Anchoring and securing. It's important that we secure our hope, that we're anchored to it. We need to make our hope sure. Now, the Hebrew writer is helping his readers to understand how they can do that. And he takes them back to the ancients, and he talks about the fact that they secured their hope. And there's two ways, or two things that he mentions here that we want to bring out today. Number one, you can make your hope sure by employing faith and patience, and then you make your hope sure by holding on to the promise and oath that anchors us to the Lord. And so let's look at those two concepts in verses 9 through 12. You employ faith and patience like the ancients. He says these people are being sluggish. He doesn't want them to be sluggish. It means they're growing apathetic. They're slowing down spiritually. You've probably experienced that yourself at some point in your spiritual journey. I have. There are times where the world just crowds in. There are times where the trials are so severe that you kind of leave spiritual things and you're more focused on the here and now. And you're sluggish. They can correct that, the Hebrew writer says, by imitating folks who inherited the promises of God. He gives Abraham as example in verse 13, but in verse 12, he mentions those, plural, who inherit the promise. There are others. The word imitate that he uses here is really the Greek word mimetai. And we get our word mimic from that word mimetai. We are to mimic them, imitate them. You can make your hope secure in the same way that the ancients did. They never let go of their hope, and that's why they actually received what God promised. And a number of examples could be given. The children of Israel finally received the land of promise because they had secured their hope. Abraham was given the hope of a son, and it happened just like God said. God promised Joshua a victory over Jericho, and he received it without ever firing a shot, just by marching around the city. God promised Gideon that if he reduced his army from 32,000 soldiers to just 300 men, armed them with trumpets, torches, and pitchers, he would be victorious over the Midianites and the Amalekites. And the Bible says they were numbered so many, they were like the sand of the seashore. And it happened just like God said it would happen. Throughout history, when God laid out a hope for his people, whenever they took hold of that hope and never let go of that hope, then all of the promises were fulfilled. And the Hebrew writer says that we have to imitate, we have to mimic those people. And we do that with faith and patience. So what is faith? This evening, I'm going to really talk about faith from Hebrews chapter 11. That's the faith chapter. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, he says in verse 1 of chapter 11. It is the conviction of things not seen. God has laid out some unseen things that he's promised to give you. You don't have them in hand right now. You can't even see them with your physical eyes. So they are a hope that he's laid out for us. The only way you can see them is through the eyes of faith. And faith is basically where God says, I have something to give you, that's a promise. And when you believe that and act accordingly, then you have saving faith. You remember when Jesus walked on the water in a storm, and Peter's in the boat, and Peter's always the guy that speaks up first. He was the Mike Gray of the first century, I think. I think that's a compliment, but it's left-handed, probably, Michael, I don't know. Boy, I want to do that, Peter said. Lord, if you bid me, I'd come out there and walk on that water too. And so the Lord said, come on, Peter. He had to believe what Jesus said. Then he had to act upon that belief, didn't he? These people today that says, it's belief only, they just don't understand what faith really is. If you don't act on your belief, you don't really have faith. What if Peter stayed in the boat? What would that indicate? He didn't really believe. And so he came out of the boat, and for a time he did something that was impossible from our human perspective. Something that you and I could never do. Well, all of the people of the Old Testament that we've mentioned, we're to imitate them and employ that kind of faith in securing our hope. And so Joshua had the folks walk around Jericho. His hope was, his expectation was, The walls would come tumbling down. It was faith that secured that hope. God said it would happen. He believed it would happen. He acted upon what God said, and their hope was realized, and they defeated the city of Jericho. And we have to imitate that kind of faith. But also patience is what the Hebrew writer says. Patience is comes from a Greek term, or really two Greek terms that are put together, long and suffering. And here the King James always likes to translate patience by that English term, long suffering, and that's a good translation. It means to hold out long. It means to suffer and endure long without giving up, without letting go. And suffering has to do with all the hardships that would challenge your faith, your belief, and your hold on the hope that God has set before you. Patience is the stuff that keeps people from giving up despite all of the obstacles they might face. It wasn't easy for Joshua to lead the children of Israel into the land of promise and take that land, but he never gave up. They were defeated the first time at Ai because of sin in the camp. What if Joshua had said, well, it's just too hard, we can't do this, and just given up? They would have never taken the promised land. But he realized there was something wrong, and he straightened it out, and they continued to fight, and he won the promised land. Faith and patience are essential in making our hope secure. If you can't see through the eyes of faith what God holds out for us as a hope in the unseen future, then you're not going to secure your hope. You'll lose it. You've got to have the faith that God wants you to have in what he says. And if you can't endure with patience whatever troubles come your way, whatever tries to interfere with your reaching that goal that God set out for you, you have not secured your hope. You're not anchored to it. So many people have fallen away, haven't they? Look around in your congregation. Is it what it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Have people drifted away? These are people who didn't have faith and patience, who didn't have security in anchoring themselves to their hope. Well, here's the second thing I want us to understand, and what the Hebrew writer brings out. You secure your hope by holding on to the promise and the oath that anchors us to Christ. Now, we think of an anchor in terms of boats, and an anchor is a heavy object that is lowered into the water to secure a boat in a specific location so that it doesn't drift all over the place. A chain or rope is used to make the arrangement sure. The rope is tied at one end of the anchor, and the other end of the rope is tied to the boat. And you're saying, duh, everybody knows that. Well, you'd think so, but then there's me. When I first became a full-time preacher, I was in St. Paul, Minnesota. They have 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, and they're proud of every one of them. I have fished two of them. I've got 9,998 lakes. I need some time off to go fishing, I guess. I was a young, wet-behind-the-ears kind of preacher. And one, I think it was a Labor Day weekend like this, there was an outing and they wanted me to go. And we all went up fishing and camping out. And I had no equipment for that. Mary and I were just married a couple of years, I guess, and poor as church mice. So they said, ah, don't worry about it. You can sleep in my camper and old Jimmy's got the boat and all the fishing gear that you'll need, and come go with us. And so we did. And the guy that we slept, the family we slept with, there were three couples in that. It was one of those low campers that, you know, you flip it out, it raises the top. I forget what they call them. Pop-up, that's it. And then the ends flip out. And one couple was on one end and another couple on the other end. Mary and I were on the floor in between. And because of the weight on both ends, the door kept opening. It would not, you know, latch very well. So it's my job all through the night to shut that silly door. And I'm wondering, why did I ever choose to be a preacher? Anyway, the next day, seven guys are out in a boat. It's the elders' boat. Very proud of it. And we go fishing. And I'm at the front of the boat, and he's in the back. But there's seven of us. It's a big boat, big enough. And we're rowing. And we got to a spot, and he said, "This is it. We're going to catch some fish here." He said, "Guy, there's an anchor under your seat. Anchor us." So I reached out there, and there's this big heavy thing. Took both hands. I threw it in, man. Had a yellow nylon rope attached to it. And we start fishing. Man, I'm excited. I hope I'm catching. Pretty soon the elder said, "Guy, we're drifting. Did you tie off that anchor?" And I said, "Tie it off?" And so they handed me the oar. And I'm rowing us around. The elder hopes that he can see the nylon rope floating, because it was his prize anchor that I had lost. I thought I was done for. My preaching career was over. But I learned something there. You got to tie it off on both ends, don't you, in order to be anchored correctly. That's how a boat is secured. And the Hebrew writer is saying that we have an anchor in heaven. Jesus has entered into that unseen realm beyond the veil. It's tied off there. But what about your end? You're not anchored to it unless you hold on. And so in making this point, the Hebrew writer uses the illustration of Abraham. And that's such a fascinating story, isn't it? Abraham. There's something going on behind me, isn't there? You know, I was preaching up in a little mountain town in Colorado. And I'm so old, I've forgotten the name of the town. But they had built the church building with a big picture window behind the pulpit. And I'm preaching, and all of a sudden everybody's looking beyond me out that picture window. And I turned around, and a cloud came in low. This was in July. Just was moving in, and they're watching it. And then it snowed. Just dumped snow, and then moved on. I shut it down. I couldn't compete with that. And Lucas, I'm not sure I can compete with you. Lucas might help me tell the story of Abraham. One day God came to Abraham and he said, "Abraham, I'm going to make you the father of a great nation of people. So many people. You're going to have so many descendants that you're not even going to be able to count them all. They'll be like the stars of the sky, the sand of the seashore. Do you believe that, Abraham?" "Oh, yes, Lord." "Can you see it?" "Yes, Lord. I believe. I can hardly wait." And the Lord said, "Abraham, it's not going to happen right away. And I don't want you to get discouraged or begin to doubt that it's going to happen. So I want to secure you to this expectation. I want you to be secured to it. I want us to tie it down. I'm going to do it by tying you to the future hope by these two ropes of my promise and my oath. I want you to hold on to my promise. I want you to hold on to my oath that I'm taking. I'm swearing that I'm going to give it to you. And on the other end, I've tied it to the unseen future. You're going to be the father of a great nation of people if you don't let go of the promise that I'm giving you and the oath that I'm making this day. And so Abraham grabs a hold of the promise and he grabs a hold of the oath. His wife, Sarah, walked up and she asked Abraham, "What are you holding on to there?" He said, "Well, the Lord has given me this promise. That's this in this hand. And then he made an oath in this hand. And he tied me to a great nation of people in the future. It's the unseen future." And Sarah said, "Do you really believe there's a great nation at the other end of these ropes? At the other end of this promise and the oath?" "I sure do," Abraham said. "I can see it clearly. I know it's going to happen. I expect it to happen." Sarah laughed. "Don't you think you're a little old to be having children?" Abraham said, "Well, who do you think you are? You're older. You're too old." And then he began to think, "What about this age thing?" And the next time the Lord came around, Abraham said, "What about the fact that Sarah's too old and that I'm so old?" And the Lord said, "Abraham, what are you holding on to? I've got your promise and I've got your oath. Hold on, Abraham. No matter what happens, no matter what you think, hold on to my promise. Hold on to my oath." And so Abraham doesn't think about the age problem anymore, and his grip on those rope ends gets even tighter. Later, Sarah comes around and they're talking about it. "You still holding on to that rope of the hope of a great nation of people?" "I am, Sarah. I'm not going to let go of God's promise or God's oath. I know I'm past my prime, but that doesn't discourage me. I know for certain it's going to happen." Sarah said, I've been thinking about this, and maybe what God intended was for you to take Hagar, my handmaid, as your wife. She's a lot younger. She can have children." And Abraham said, "Say, maybe you're right." And Ishmael was born. Now Abraham's excited. He can hardly wait for the Lord to come back to see him. And when the Lord returns, he says, "Lord, look, Ishmael! Ishmael, I can see it's happening. I know the future is going to be a reality. I can see the nation through Ishmael." And the Lord says, "Abraham, it's not through Ishmael. It'll be through the fruit of Sarah that the nation will come." But Abraham said, "Lord, if I'm too old, and if it's not Ishmael, how in the world is it going to be possible for me to be the father of a great nation of people? What's in your hands, Abraham? I've got your promise. I've got your oath. Hold on, Abraham. Don't let go." Sometime later, Sarah comes by. She said, "Abraham, are you still holding on to those ropes?" He said, "Yes." She said, "Well, hold on to your hat. Have I got news for you?" Isaac was born. Abraham is so excited he can hardly contain himself. The reality is beginning. He sees it. He's beginning to possess it. When the Lord comes by, he says, "Lord, I never doubted you. Isaac, I know it's coming." And then the Lord said, "Abraham, take that boy up on top of the mountain. Offer him as a sacrifice to me." And here's where it gets really interesting, because Abraham said, okay, no problem. By this time, Abraham's hope is certain, it's secure. He has assurance of what God promised and swore to. But I think there was a lot of anxiety going on in the mind and heart of Abraham as he began to pack that day to go to the mountain. But he acted on his faith. And God rewarded him. And today, Abraham is the father of a great physical nation of people, so numerous, and a spiritual nation, so numerous that you can't even count them. That's what the Hebrews writer is wanting his readers to understand. God has promised you something. God has sworn to it. Don't let go. One day in heaven, the Father and the Son were having a discussion. Do you see what's happening down there with the people that we created? They're drowning in a sea of sin. And the Father said, Son, I want them out of that terrible circumstance, and I want them up here in glory with us to enjoy our life forever. Would you go down there and save them from drowning in the sea of sin? Just take this rope, tie it around your waist, and then hand the two ends of the rope as you wrap it around your waist. Give them the two ends who are to the folks who are down there drowning. Tell them to grab hold of it. Then you come back here and anchor it. And tell them if they'll just hold on to those rope ends, it doesn't matter how difficult the storms of life might become for them. They'll never drift away from what we're offering them. And so Jesus complied with the will of God. It wasn't easy for him, but he came among us. He lived among us. He told us of the heavenly goal the Father had for us. He explained that the only way to ride out the storms of this life was to be anchored to him. I've wrapped this around my waist. Here are the two ends. It's the promise of God. It's the oath of God. Heaven is yours if you just hang on. And I'm going to anchor it for you. He moved into the unseen realm, opening the doors to heaven to enter in. And he left the door open for us. But we have to hold on to the promise. And we have to hold on to the oath that God gave us. We need to know today that we're going to heaven. When you doubt something, you become inactive. If you didn't think that chair would hold you up, you would not actively sit in it. When you doubt, you don't do. That's what's happening with the Hebrew readers. If you don't know for certain, you need to make some changes in your life. God holds it out for you. It's yours. You don't have it in your hand now. It's something that is not yet. Those are hoped for things. But it's real. And it's yours. If you just hold on and never let go. I don't know where you are spiritually this morning. Only you know and God knows. But you know, don't you? You know. And you may be putting on some kind of act in front of everyone else, but you know deep down where you live, in your being, where you are genuinely in your relationship with God. If it isn't what it ought to be, you know that. It's our tradition to offer the invitation. It's a great tradition because we can get our lives right among friends and brothers who love us and who want to help us. If you want to come to the front, if you're not in a right relationship with the Lord and get things right with Him today, if you need to confess that in a public way, you can come while we stand together and sing this song of encouragement.